Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It was brink of shutdown Friday night, and then a deal. $38.5 billion in cuts, about 1% of our $3.7 trillion budget. Details being hashed out right now, and much more hashing out to come. The House votes this week on Republican Representative Paul Ryan's aggressive plans for 2012 and beyond. President Obama speaks to his own long-term plan Wednesday night. And then there's the looming fight over raising the U.S. debt ceiling. It's the country's future being hashed out here. This hour on Point, a six-month deal and the battle ahead over cuts, spending, and the direction of this country. You can join the conversation. Was $38, $39 billion in cuts what the country needed right now? Too much, too little, and what next? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the president late Friday night speaking after the compromise to cut $38.5 billion from the budget, averting a government shutdown.
This agreement between Democrats and Republicans on behalf of all Americans is on a budget that invests in our future while making the largest annual spending cut in our history.
We're seeing all kinds of reactions, right, left, and center over this weekend, and much more to come looking ahead. We will hear in this hour from Tea Party-backed Republican Congressman Alan West of Florida and Democratic Congressman Anthony Weiner from New York. But joining me first today from Washington to bring us up to speed is Laura McGann, Deputy Congressional Reporter for Politico. Laura, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi.
So how much is actually worked out? How much is still being worked out right now in this $38.5 billion, Laura?
Well, right now we have the broad contours worked out. So we know that there will be about $38.5 billion in cuts. It's actually even more than that because the Pentagon got an increase of $4 billion. So we're going to see basically $42 billion cut elsewhere in the budget. Okay. And those are the details that we're going to see worked out this week. So we just have kind of a broad sketch right now.
But how blind was that? I mean, when the president and John Boehner, I don't know, said okay or shook hands late Friday night, I mean, do they really know what's in any detail what's going to be in there in those cuts?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the fight. So the fight was how much to cut, but also where. Republicans had said they only wanted cuts from discretionary spending, and Democrats said, no, we need to spread the cuts out more broadly into mandatory spending as well. So there was some negotiating about, you know, where the cuts are going to come from, and Democrats did get, you know, a small victory in that it we're seeing the money spread out across the budget.
Can you give us any details on, you know, what may be cut? I mean, are there half a dozen things already out there in public? Is it all still under the covers? What?
I think the details that you're looking for are sort of wait and see. So we know that there will be some savings. Several billion dollars were cut from a program that went towards the new health care reform law, for example. So we know that $6 billion was cut from that. We know that some money will be cut from a Medicaid program, sort of a incentive program is being cut. So we'll see several billion dollars cut from there. But when you start getting out to specific programs, it's not something we don't know yet. You know, will X program lose $25 million? Or we don't know that. That's not kind of the level of detail where we are yet. That's kind of that will come next.
Laura, on health care and on financial regulation, we know there are cuts coming to each of those budgets. Are those cuts deep enough to derail or significantly change the plans there? How does it work? Does it just slow those things down? What does it mean?
I mean, that's a tough question to kind of suss those both out. I mean, the Democratic Senate has said, you know, we're protecting financial reform. You know, we're not going to let this be completely derailed. And as far as health care, you know, Republicans didn't completely defund the new health care reform law in this budget package. So it's not like we've seen something, the plug completely pulled on last year's reform law. So I would say So I would say no to that question.
So what needs to happen then on Capitol Hill for this agreement, this top-level agreement, to actually become law?
I mean, they have to vote on it, basically. I mean, on Friday there was a deal basically hashed out to kind of keep the government running temporarily until they can get this through Congress this week, and that should happen. And that should happen this week because Congress is scheduled to go on a two-week break next week. So
is there any question about that happening? Are there? I'm seeing Republicans here, some of them saying the cuts weren't big enough. I'm seeing some Democrats unhappy as well. Is it clear that the votes are there in Congress?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's in serious jeopardy, but there have been, I think Alan West is coming on the show later, you know, and there have been other Tea Party Republicans who have said, you know, these are not deep enough cuts, and then there are progressives who are saying this is, you know, not, this, you know, the economy is too unstable to be making these huge cuts in spending right now, but I don't think it's in serious jeopardy of not passing. I don't think that that's the case.
The president himself is going to speak on Wednesday with his vision of what? Longer term, not this next 6 months, but what's he promising for this speech, Laura?
I mean, I think Wednesday we're going to see Barack Obama come out and sketch sort of his vision for spending for the long term for the United States. And it's really a direct rebuttal to Congressman Paul Ryan's proposal that came out last week as well, which got a lot of coverage, a lot of press, because it laid out sort of the Republican vision for entitlement spending for the long term, and how you know, how Paul Ryan envisions Medicare and mm-hmm. Medicaid and taxes playing out over the long term. And I think, you know, Barack Obama is going to come out and lay out a very different vision. There's been reporting this morning that, you know, we're going to hear him say that very wealthy Americans need to be paying more in taxes. Paul Ryan has said, you know, we need to cut taxes to the very sort of upper tiers of taxpayers. So we're going to see this contrast, a very stark contrast this week playing out between the two parties.
Here was the president's senior political strategist, David Plouffe. This is yesterday, talking about the speech coming up midweek, Wednesday, from President Obama on Fox News Sunday.
I'll lay out his approach this week in terms of the scale of deficit reduction he thinks the country needs so we can grow economically and win the future, a balanced approach.
A balanced approach. The president seeming to sort of throw his arms around the big cuts late Friday night. But Republicans were saying, look, we made him take these cuts. Here's House Majority Leader Eric Cantor of Virginia saying it wasn't easy to get President Obama to agree to the spending cuts.
I sit here and I listen to David Plouffe talk about, you know, their commitment to cut spending, and knowing full well that for the last 2 months, we've had to bring this president kicking and screaming to the table to cut spending.
Laura, last question here. You've got Republicans saying it wasn't enough. You've got Democrats saying, where's this president leading? He asked for $40 billion additional in spending originally, ends up cutting almost that much, maybe more, as you say. Is the White House happy politically and functionally with what they've got when Friday night?
I mean, I think there are a couple victories there. I mean, there was no government shutdown. I think that would have been a disaster. The other kind of major, I think, victory for Democrats was that a policy rider that would have defunded Planned Parenthood was removed. I mean, that would have been a huge disaster for Democrats to go back to their base and say we allowed the defunding of Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that this is sort of the first salvo. I mean, this is the beginning of a long discussion about spending and the deficit and the budget. I mean, we're going to be hearing about this for months. So I think the speech is going to be worth watching, because it's going to be Barack Obama sort of laying out his vision. But I don't think anyone won or lost today. You know, I think that this is something that we're going to be watching unfold for the next year. And, you know, it's going to be a major issue in the 2012 election.
Well, no kidding. Huge stakes here. And you'd have to say it leans toward the cutting, pretty deep cutting, biggest in history, yeah. As Republicans, yeah, and the president said on Friday night. Laura McGann with Politico, thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Joining us now from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, is Congressman Alan West. He's a Tea Party-backed House freshman from Florida's 22nd District, includes West Palm Beach and Boca Raton, retired as lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Army in 2004, later an advisor to the Afghan Army. He has said he will vote against the $38.5 billion spending cut hammered out late Friday night. Congressman West, thanks for being with us. Are you not going to vote for this thing after all that?
Well, greetings, Tom, and right now I probably will not be supporting that because I look at it this way. When you talk about the fact over the past 3 years we've had deficits, annual deficits that have run from 1.3 up to 1.6 trillion, when we've had a debt that is at 14.3 trillion, when we, you know, have had a deficit spending month in February of $223 billion, you know, this thing about 38.5 really is a drop in the ocean when you're spending $4 billion a month. So I think we have to get a little bit more serious with the American people about what we're doing.
What about the argument, we've heard it from Mark Zandi and others, that the big cutbacks would mean job losses at a time? I mean, your Tea Party wave came in pushing for jobs, and could be hundreds of thousands of jobs lost here.
One of the key things, if you let me answer, is you have to reduce the size and scope of the federal government so that we can have those long-term sustainable economic and job growth. When you look at, I think it was about a month ago now, the GAO report that came out with $100 billion to $200 billion of duplicative programs in Washington, D.C., that's a great starting point. Just last week, I brought forth a bill that looked at some wasteful spending in the Pentagon. And it ended up being, you know, $35 million in fiscal year 12, $180 million over the next 5 years. But if every member of Congress up there did the exact same thing, looking for a wasteful program, think about the impact that would have on our debt deficit.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a moment of budget agreement, a moment, and what comes next. Congressman Alan West is with us, Tea Party backed, with us today from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We'll hear from the Democrats' Anthony Weiner in a moment. Yesterday on ABC's This Week, Indiana Republican Congressman Mike Pence, colleague of Alan West, said he felt the billion-dollar cuts worked out late last week were not enough.
I think John Boehner fought the good fight. I think he drove a hard bargain here. I want to see the details, but from what I know, it sounds like John Boehner got a good deal. Probably not good enough for me to support it.
And not good enough for Mike Pence to support it. Alan West says he wouldn't support it. Alan West, why not? I mean, that's the biggest in history. It prevented a government shutdown. Are you sure? Or, you know, when it comes to it, are you likely to be there for your speaker?
Well, the thing is, it's not about being there for the speaker. It's about being there for the constituents to sit me in Washington, D.C. And look, you know, everyone's running around wanting to pat themselves on the back, talking about this is the biggest spending cut ever. But it pales in comparison when you look at the biggest spending deficits that we're having right now. And that's why I think the American people are expecting a more exertion coming from their elected officials. Now, I will say this. I think one of the great things that has come out is that we are seeing a change in the culture, a change in the lexicon of Washington, D.C., and that we are finally talking about cuts to how much more we can spend. So I think that if there's anything, that is a great victory for the American people, because as the CBO report stated last week, if we continue down this path by 2035 to 2040, we're going to be in a fiscal Armageddon.
So the president talked about this as though it was a kind of victory. I mean, big sacrifices there from where he started, but a kind of victory. Do you see it as a Tea Party victory?
Like I said, once again, it's not a big victory for anyone. I think that in a military analysis, it takes 5 miles to turn an aircraft carrier so they can launch into the wind. So I think at least we have started to make that turn. And of course, no, we're not. But, you know, it's a start, and at least we are now talking about a different type of perspective in Washington, D.C. But in the past 3 years, as I said, when you have these incredible deficit spending, annual deficit spending from, you know, 1.3 up to 1.5 or even maybe 1.6 trillion, you know, $38 billion, and the fact that you're spending $4 billion a day, basically since last Friday, we are, you know, before we even signed this thing into law, we could already have spent that money.
Paul Ryan, of course, House Budget Committee Chairman, is out with his big plan. We'll hear more about that this week as well. It goes very strong at Medicare and Medicaid. Many Tea Party people attacked Democrats in the last election season for going after Medicare. Of course, this would Paul Ryan's plan would essentially end Medicare as we've known it and give people a kind of voucher instead, which may or may not keep up with health care costs, probably wouldn't over time. Are you worried that the seniors who helped the Tea Party and Republicans win their victory in the House last fall may turn around and whack Tea Party candidates and Republicans in the next election, Congressman?
No, I'm not, because I've already been explaining it in the countless town halls that I've had down here. You know, look, when you pass the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, it had $500 billion of cuts to Medicare right now. And so I think that there's a little bit of duplicitous hypocrisy there. What we're talking about is making sure that Medicaid and Medicare are sustainable into the future. And if we don't do something about it, by those out years of 2040, Medicare and indeed Social Security will subsume our entire GDP, which means the United States of America will be a permanent borrower nation. You talk about lowering health care costs. That's one of the things I think we need to go back and look at is how we truly can have health care reform. Just an expansion of government with 159 new government bureaucracies and agencies, 11 new taxes and things of that nature.
So cut away, Paul Ryan. Congressman, let me bring our listeners in, if I may.
I don't think it's about cutting away. I think it's about coming up with viable solutions as we move forward for the American people. And look, let's be very honest. Leadership is about making some hard decisions. It's not about going up there and being a politician and saying the things that you think people want to hear just so you can go back to Washington, D.C. So I'd rather start to look at some of the hard decisions that we have to make and the American people know have to be done.
Rick in Tennessee, you're on the air with Congressman Alan West in Fort Lauderdale.
Thank you. As a lifelong Republican, I agree we've got to get a lot of our spending under control. What I think the Republican Party is not hearing yet from a lot of us in middle America is that we are outraged at the tax code and the way it supports the super wealthy and certain corporations. Do away with the Internal Revenue Code. If they want to really do something, get rid of the whole bloody thing. Tax everybody at a flat rate. Cap it at, say, 25 or 35% for the wealthiest, but let them pay that much like the rest of us do. Warren Buffett hit it on the head when he said that his secretary pays a greater share of her income than does he.
Do you see what you need in Paul Ryan's plan that would bring rates down? But he says he would close loopholes, Rick.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that we have talked about is flattening out the tax code, not just the personal income tax rate, but also the business tax rate. Because right now, when you look at the tax code, we have 67,000 pages. 47% of wage-earning Americans are not paying federal income taxes, and I think that creates an incredible disparity here if you have 53% pulling the wagon for the other 47%. So part of the plan as we go forth is, you know, Chairman Dave Camp of the Ways and Means Committee looking at reforming our tax code.
Rick, are you confident in the direction Republicans are going here? Or, you know, the critics say they're trying to balance a budget on the backs of those with less.
No, I had a comment the other night at a baseball game, Little League. I think one of the parents hit it on the head when they said that both the Democrats and the Republicans are too much in bed. We saw it with the Democrats with the health plan last year, too much in bed with the special interest groups, all these folks spewing money and corrupting our Congress. If you've got a lot of money, you can get in and get to one of these congressmen. I don't care whether they're Democrat or Republican. I'm just getting fed up with the whole thing, and a lot of us are, that what's going on is there's too much listening to these special interest groups. If you just get rid of the code, then it's very clear, right out there in front, we all have to deal with the same thing, that's it. And I'm even willing to give up the interest deduction.
Rick, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Alan West, Paul Ryan's very clear on what he would like to do with tax rates, bringing them down for the wealthy. The closing the loopholes remains to happen later. I mean, if that doesn't happen, we just get lower rates at the top and we don't get that balancing effect that he are looking for.
Well, I think that if you lower those rates, you can get rid of the loopholes, and I think just the same as you lower the corporate business tax rate, which is 35% right now, the second highest in the world, then you can stop worrying about a lot of the subsidies that you are providing from the government. So
So I think that if we do the things that we want to do at the federal government level, to say that we're looking at infusing money back into the pockets of Americans, we're looking at giving these prominent CEOs the ability to open up the capital and reinvest it and grow jobs here in America. But then our part that we have to do in Washington, D.C., is that we have to reduce that size and scope of the federal government, because one of the failures of the Bush administration was that you cannot have tax cuts and grow government at the same time. That's how you take a surplus and turn it into a deficit.
But we had tax cuts under George W. Bush, and those didn't create the big boom in jobs that he was promising. Why would it happen this time?
Well, I think it'll happen this time because, you know, if we put the pressure on the private sector to do that, I mean, they will. And I think that that's where we have to put our reliance. And once again, I think that, you know, we just didn't do the right things as far as government, you know, reducing its scope, and then also government being appeasing to the special interests. And I can tell you, in the 3-4 months that I've been up there, I mean, I've had a couple of times when some special interest groups came, singular issues such as the Joint Strike Fighter, the F-35 alternate engine. I had a visit from the CEO of GE Aviation, and I laid it down and explained to him that, you know, going for a second engine would just be a matter because we had already competed, and one company had won that engine, and that's how we should go forward. So we just have to have people that are willing to stand.
Alan West, a Tea Party-backed freshman congressman from Florida's 22nd District, West Palm Beach, Boca Raton. Congressman West, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
With us right now from New York City is Anthony Weiner, Democratic representative for New York's 9th District, includes Brooklyn, parts of Brooklyn and Queens. Anthony Weiner, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom.
What do you make of the late-night agreement from Friday night?
Well, I'm not crazy about it. I voted against it because I'm a little concerned that we've kind of defined our desire to reduce the size of government and get deficits and debts under control by only focusing on a very small part of the budget, and that part of the budget happens to benefit many of my constituents and, frankly, many people who aren't particularly well represented in Washington right now. You know, the conversation that you just had was instructive, and I like Congressman West, but, you know, this really is not about deficits and debts. This is about their abiding desire to just slash and reduce the size of government. I say that because there was no real conversation, hasn't been, about making the tax structure more fair. We've got lower tax rates we've had any time since before Kennedy, and frankly, we're one of the well-to-do in our country are taxed lower than almost any other country on earth. And so I just don't think that this has been a very full debate, but I'm glad the government didn't shut down, and I honor the idea that there are competing desires in Washington and you don't always get what you want, but I wasn't crazy about the deal.
If it's not been a full debate, I mean, is that Harry Reid's fault, Democratic House leadership, President Obama here? I've got, this is from one of our listeners online, Congressman Weiner, says, you know, timid Obama's only core values turn out to be compromising and everything else is negotiable. You're not even good at that. Starts in the middle, makes concessions, claims victory, which validates Republican talking points and crackpot economic theories. Is there a failure of presidential leadership in the ultimate cuts, or is this the sort of reasonable middle ground that means success for the president or maybe Democrats?
Here's the problem here is that if this was simply the two sides negotiating on how you avoid a government shutdown, and we want the same basic outcome, we're trying to figure out how you get it, it would be a relatively easy negotiation. It's a matter of figuring out where the middle number is. The problem is we have this nihilistic streak among some of the newer members of Congress who, frankly, would take some pleasure in shutting down government, who really don't have all that much concern about the idea that if you slash Medicaid, it's not as if the bill fairy is going to come pay for health care for those that are less able to pay for themselves. Those bills would just get passed along to someone else. That is a moment that has captured the American political debate starting in campaign 2010 and still to some degree holds sway in Washington. Last week, when Speaker Boehner went and presented at some point to his caucus the idea that they might have to get ready for a shutdown, literally it was reported, people cheered. You know, so to some degree, look, I have reservations about the negotiating style of the president. And I know that I was concerned about the way that the tax cut the taxes were extended at the tail end of last year.
Bush's tax cuts for the well-to-do, yeah.
Correct. But I think we've got to realize now that we need a forceful pushback against people like Congressman West that you just had on about the idea that they really want to keep any of these, that they fundamentally care. You know, you caught Congressman West in a fundamental contradiction of the Tea Party movement. They criticized Democrats roundly for the idea that we extended Medicare by 10 years, got $500 billion of efficiencies out of the program. They said, oh, that would be devastating to Medicare. Well, take a look at what they're going to propose this week, literally ending Medicare as a program for seniors guaranteed in the future. And so I think there's a certain level of inconsistency here, but they're winning the debate. I think that I can say that clearly. They're winning this debate because we've kind of bought into some of their language.
Whose fault is that? If they're winning the debate from your perspective, is it the president's? Paul Krugman says today, you know, where's the president? The president's missing. Is it the Democrats themselves have not responded to a public desire to see a more balanced budget?
Well, I will say this. I think to some degree, starting in 2010, there was this kind of a sense that, you know what, there's no way the Republicans can be successful with a strategy of slashing Medicare, of privatizing portions of Social Security, because, you know, the American people understand the value of those programs. And to some degree, I don't think that any of this debate was joined as forcefully as it should be in a lot of quarters. And I don't want to point fingers at people we all kind of have to figure out this week, and we have a common enemy this week, and that is the Paul Ryan budget, which hopefully we'll talk about for in a moment, which would be devastating to the things we care about. But I do think that now we have an opportunity. Now I think the American people, many of whom fundamentally believe, you know, there's no way, I don't care how much they argue about Medicare, they're not going to end it. Oh, yes, we are. Yeah, I can tell you that Paul Ryan and the Republicans in Congress want to end it. And people who think, well, Social Security's been there since 1935, it's not going anywhere. Well, no, they're talking about taking large portions of it and investing it in the stock market. These debates perhaps are awakening people to kind of larger civic conversations we haven't had, and now maybe we need to have it. Were Democrats slow to kind of take up the cudgel? I think perhaps we were too slow to do so.
Do you think the president, if the Republicans are winning the debate so far by kind of owning the framework of it, do you think the president's going to change that on Wednesday night? Or is he triangulating here, looking for his own reelection interests to get in that kind of middle ground where he may be able to win independents and just assume that Democrats will have to come along with him?
Well, Tom, I know that you have to beat something with something. And up to now, it's been kind of one hand clapping. You know, everyone's fawning over the Ryan budget if it's some kind of a document that was handed down from the Temple Mount. Now we're going to have an actual competition of ideas where the president is going to lay out an alternative vision. We Democrats in Congress are going to lay out an alternative vision. And I think that's the way you win these conversations. Any jackass can build a barn. Anyone can build a barn, but it takes It takes a great man to win to build a barn, but any jackass can kick one down, as I butcher the metaphor. But
yeah.
But the fact is that we should want this debate, and I think the president gets that, and I think that he's now going to treat the Ryan budget as seriously as we should treat it, not because it's that serious a document, but it does seriously represent where Republicans are coming from.
You're going to have a Democratic framework, you think, shared by House and Senate Democrats along with the president that you can put forward as the Democrats' answer, or the president kind of posing in the middle and Democrats dissenting from the left?
We're going to try not to do the latter. Look, health care reform was an instructive exercise. People like me and others believe that we should have pursued a single-payer plan like Medicare for all Americans. We thought it was simpler and more efficient. But we compromised, as people have to do in legislation, and it's not a vice. And now people like me are among the most full-throated advocates for the health care plan that are out there. I don't believe that you necessarily have to have complete uniformity of opinion, but I can tell you this. We are unified, perhaps not in every line of the budget, but we're unified in the sense that we have a real struggle for the soul of this country right now. The people that are running the House of Representatives and many of the state houses are fundamentally don't believe that people have a right to organize, have been turning against working people and people in the middle class. We now have a budget in Washington that takes direct aim at virtually every major improvement in our country in the last 50 years, and goes even further than that, proposes another big tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. So will we have some internal disagreement? Of course. We're Democrats. That's almost the way we always function. But we know the common enemy.
Boy, it's going to be interesting this week. If John Boehner doesn't have enough Tea Party votes to put this deal over the top, will it be your vote that does it, Congressman?
No.
Okay. We'll be watching. Anthony Weiner, Democratic representative from New York's 9th District. Thank you for joining us, Congressman.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about a moment of budget agreement or a deal anyway, and what comes next. There is a lot more coming, bigger scale. Yesterday on ABC's This Week, Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, senior Democrat on the Budget Committee, was kind of optimistic about the budget deal, but he said he didn't like the Republicans use the leverage of the budget to try to push through a political agenda.
I think that this will pass, and I'm very determined, of course, to work with my colleagues to prevent a government shutdown because it would have huge disruption in the economy. And that's the seesaw that we're living with here. But look, these guys took this to brink not only to do something that won't create a job, but to impose their own sort of right-wing policies on the country.
Most of those policy issues didn't make it past the final deal, but Republican Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin had the sound of somebody yesterday on NBC's Meet the Press who's setting the agenda.
We want job creation, economic growth, and that's why if you go down the tax increase path, you're sacrificing the economy, and especially when the fact that the problem we have is spending, not taxes. We don't think the answer to prosperity is borrowing and spending more money.
Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Gerald Seib joins us right now from Washington, assistant managing editor, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, writes the paper's weekly Capital Journal column. Jerry Seib, thank you so much for being with us. What just happened here, Jerry?
Well, what just happened was that people decided to settle one smallish fight to get on to two bigger fights, the bigger one being the budget that Congressman Ryan was just talking about, that we heard him describing as a way to balance the budget in the long run, or at least reduce the deficit in the long run without raising taxes, and a Democratic view, which you're going to hear from President Obama later this week, that the way to deal with this is not just to cut spending, but also to raise taxes or to keep taxes up on wealthier Americans, and that's a big divide. And I think what we saw last weekend was a very vigorous negotiation that produced what might actually be called a reasonable compromise, which used to be dirty words in Washington, which have come back somehow.
So if this is the setup in relatively small numbers, though it's a lot of billions, for a much bigger fight to come, who's advantaged by what just happened? I mean, you've got a lot of people saying, you know, Republicans are really kind of drawing the framework here. The president started out this whole budget conversation last year saying he wanted $40 billion in additional spending. He's taking all that much, almost that much in cuts, Jerry.
Right. And I think that it is a fair analysis to say that the Republicans and Speaker Boehner may have gotten more out of this than the Democrats did. I mean, as you say, the Democrats came into this wanting no additional spending cuts. They gave up $38 or $39 billion in the negotiation. They got in return an agreement that something they didn't like wouldn't happen, which was that some social policy wouldn't be larded onto the budget cuts. So they're counting that as a victory. But, you know, that doesn't mean that Speaker Boehner isn't still being attacked on his right for giving up too much. You know, those who wanted $60 billion in spending cuts as opposed to $38 or $39 billion in spending cuts are attacking Speaker Boehner, and many of them, at least several dozen of them, won't vote for this deal when it finally gets to the floor later this week. So it's one of those situations where if some people on both sides are unhappy, maybe they've done the best they could in the middle.
Is there any doubt that this deal will be passed by Congress? Could it actually get stalled there again? Might it end up be Democrats putting it over the top?
Well, first, nobody knows because they reached the deal, though the details weren't written down, and then they all left town for the weekend, and they'll be regathering today and tomorrow, and then we'll see. But I seriously doubt that this will have a problem now. I mean, everybody knew the broad outlines of the deal. Those who were going to vote against this deal were going to vote against it no matter what the details, so I don't think the details will make much of a difference to them. And the imperative at the top, that is to say, with Speaker Boehner, with Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and with President Obama, was for the last 10 days or so, get this done so the government doesn't shut down. And when the leaders all come together on an agreement on something broad and important like that, the troops tend to fall in line enough to get it done.
You wrote after last fall's elections that the Democrats in the first year and a half and more of the Obama administration had overreached with their policy initiatives and were being punished by voters, with the Republicans taking back the House. Is it possible that Republicans are repeating that mistake, that the Republicans are now overreaching from the cut, including cut taxes on the wealthy side?
It's possible. And, you know, it looked for a moment there on Friday night when there was some doubt about whether this deal would be struck and whether the government might actually shut down after all, when I really did think that we were in the process of seeing a potential Republican overreach. That didn't happen in the end because Speaker Boehner pulled them back. But I think, you know, the history of politics in the last several decades, one could argue, is the history of the two parties alternately overreaching, overreading their mandate. And that might be what happens here. I saw, though, in Speaker Boehner's behavior here, a real effort to not make that mistake again. And that's why I think, though, he pushed the negotiations to the 11th hour and maybe the 59th minute of the 11th hour, I don't think he intended to let this shutdown happen precisely because he didn't want it to be read as a moment of Republican overreach in the infancy of his speakership.
And what about the president himself? Does he position himself well here as the sort of wise adult in the middle? Is that a winning position as you roll this tape forward?
I think it probably is for him. It's making some people in his party uncomfortable, if not angry. But I think from his point of view, I think the conclusion that he and the people around him reached was that too often in the previous 2 years, he was seen as just one more partisan warrior in Washington, as opposed to the president above the partisan squabbling. And the adult in the room has become the metaphor for the position he's taking now. It is, I think, beneficial for the president to be seen as a bigger player than the others on the stage, and I think that position allows him to do that. I will say, though, that the danger in that is that you, A, have to anger some people in your own party occasionally, and he's done that, and B, that if you don't actually get the children to, you know, to be quiet and behave, you don't look like much of a leader. So to get to that position and to position yourself that way does require that you show some results in the end, and that's going to be true as we go through the next couple of budget fights as well.
Yeah, hard to say what's a result if you're not sure where what he's standing for in the first place.
Right.
Maybe at this point. Let's hear from our listeners, though. Jackson, Kentucky. Len, you're on the air with Gerald Seib.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with Representative Ryan on some of the proposals that he put forth. Let's tighten up the IRS code, simplify that, take away a lot of things, tighten up the corporate side. But after paying into Social Security for 40 years, and by the time I retire, it'd be 50-some years, and not having that, you know, safety net of medical coverage.
Yep.
If the Tea Parties are really responsible, let's cut their medical benefits. While they're in office, they can have their great medical coverage. I like to have that policy myself. But after they're done, we could save millions every year if they don't get that once they leave office.
Dump them out into the same pool that you and others may find yourself in, Len. I appreciate your call, Len. Gerry Seib, there's that. We heard Anthony Weiner saying earlier, you know, when Americans wake up and see what's actually on the chopping block here, and maybe Len is representing that. I mean, how does that work for Republicans going forward? It's really changing Medicare so much, you could say it's ending it. I mean, there's going to be support there, but it's nothing like the guarantee people have had. How does that play out, Gerry?
Good question. It's the question in many ways. And I seriously doubt that Congressman Ryan thinks the precise Medicare proposal he's put forward would be enacted into law. I think he's staking out a position for what will be a long national conversation on this subject that likely will produce something short of that. I do think, though, that what Republicans are doing here represents a political gamble that they very well may win or they could easily lose, and nobody actually knows. The gamble is essentially this, Tom, that there has been a change in the way Americans think about these programs, that the effect of the last few years, the economic collapse and the giant deficits that have emerged, and a greater understanding that on top of those immediate deficits, there is this long-term yawning problem of retirement costs for baby boomers, that all those things roll together are, in fact, changing the way Americans look at these programs, and they're now more prepared than they were before to say, you know, you're right, this isn't sustainable, so things I wouldn't have accepted before, I'm now prepared to accept. If Republicans are right that that's where the country is or is at least heading, then they very well may look prescient. If not, then they've got the problems people have always associated with going after, in quotes, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
I mean, if you end up old and sick and just can't afford to take care of yourself, that's not going to feel too good, but there's the deficit. Sam in Everett, Massachusetts. Sam, thanks very much for calling.
Hey, great program. Thanks for taking my call. You know, it's very disheartening to listen to this program because it just seems that the average working class person or middle class person just has no one representing them in the government. I mean, it just seems the whole system has been hijacked by corporate interests and interests of the rich. There's no deficit problem. It's a revenue problem, and it's a very, very, very simple problem, which is that all the revenues are coming from the middle class and the lower classes, and there's no one in the corporate world is paying anything, and the wealthy pay hardly nothing, and there's no one representing the middle class and the working class. We wanted a single payer system. Poll after poll shows that. No one's gone to bat for that. You know, we had the financial industry completely, you know, rob us of our savings because of rules that were changed under the government, both Democrat and Republican. They changed the rules allowing those people to gamble with our deposits. And when the gamble didn't pay out, they socialized the loss again on our back. And I think that, you know, like Lincoln said, you can fool, you know, some of the people some of the time. You're fooling a lot of the people a lot of time. I'm just hopeful sooner or later enough Americans are gonna get that simple gist that we're being taken to the cleaners by the rich and corporate interests, and it doesn't matter whether you vote Republican or Democrat because no one's looking out for us.
Sam, I appreciate your call. Now, Gerald Saib, there's interesting an interesting take. You hear exactly where Sam's coming from here. If Alan West were still with us, of course, he'd be pushing back. You know, Sam says it's not a deficit problem, it's a revenue problem. Go after the rich. Alan West, congressman from Florida, was saying earlier, well, almost half of Americans don't pay federal income taxes at this point. I mean, the perceptions are so diametrically opposed, the ways of describing the country we're in, Jerry.
Right, and on top of that, there's almost a bipartisan consensus emerging that the corporate tax rate is actually too high for America to be competitive and ought to be lowered. That's no longer a partisan view, that's a bipartisan view.
But then you see GE paying less than nothing and everybody's up in arms.
Well, but that's the problem. I mean, you have some companies that are paying less than nothing because there are so many loopholes to drive through in the tax code, but the companies that actually are paying taxes are paying more than they need to pay to be competitive internationally. So it's a mess. But I think the broader point, Tom, that the caller puts his finger on here is that the great dividing line in many ways in the coming debate about the deficit and doing something about it, not just now but over the next 10 years, is not going to be entirely spending cuts. It's going to be about revenues, and that's really the difference that is emerging more clearly as this conversation really gets going. You have, on the one hand, Congressman Ryan, who says we can attack the deficit, in fact, must attack the deficit without raising any additional tax revenues. We have enough tax money already. You have President Obama, who is saying and is going to say on Wednesday night, that's not right. Revenues have to be part of this solution. We have to raise taxes on wealthier Americans if we're going to do this effectively and fairly. And in the middle, you have this gang of six senators that many of us in Washington mm-hmm. spent a lot of time watching and talking about, who are going to come out somewhere in the middle and are going to say, yes, some revenues, some Republicans in that group of six will say that's okay, but not too much, and a lot of spending cuts, and that's the mix. So I think there's a great tax debate coming that's wrapped up within this bigger, broader deficit reduction debate.
Is President Obama going to be as explicit in what he announces, either in his speech or, you know, before or after it on Wednesday, as Paul Ryan has been? Is there going to be, you know, a real Democratic alternative on the table? That's been kind of vague compared to the Republican side.
I don't think he will be nearly as specific. In a way, he was. He put a budget out in February that represents his budget for next year and the next 10 years. But in doing that, he sort of put a big asterisk beside his own budget, and he said, this doesn't really represent my ideas about how we bring down the cost of entitlements, Medicare and Medicaid in particular, and Social Security in the long run. That's a debate that will have to come later, and I recognize that. Well, now is later, and he's going to start down that path and join that debate, but I don't think he'll be nearly as specific as Congressman Ryan has. I think he'll be talking about principles. And as I said, one of his principles will be that the deficit problem in the long run is not going to be tackled simply by reducing the money that the government spends on Medicare, but also by increasing revenues through tax changes, and that will be a big divide. I don't think that this this debate, this discussion is likely to be resolved in the next year anyway. I think this is the setting the table for a big national conversation slash debate through the 2012 presidential election. And in many ways, that's what all of this is setting up, is a national debate in what is a presidential election year that is the occasion for great national debates.
Democrats folded on, I mean, they didn't put their own budget through last fall before the election. They sort of put it on hold until after the election, maybe because they didn't want to see deficits in there and be judged on that. You know, do you think they're going to be more up for, if this is the big issue, do they fold again? I mean, they also folded on George on the Bush tax cuts. They pushed them on forward. Or is there, you know, where's the line?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure that characterization is entirely fair to Democrats. A lot of the spending that they wanted to get approved last year got died in the Senate because I think Republicans there sensed that there was likely to be a shift in power in the House, and they wanted to have the debate we're going through right now when Republicans had a greater share of power than they did last fall, and indeed that's what's happened. So I think it would have been wiser for Democrats if they had gotten the budget House in order earlier, but I think by later in the year last year, they weren't going to get a lot of cooperation from Republicans on that front. So I don't think you can lay that one entirely at their feet. I do think that we were talking earlier about calculated risks. I think the president made a calculated risk when he put his own budget out in February in not really engaging the long-term entitlement cost debate then and waiting for Republicans to go first. They did go first. They got a fair amount of credit for having the courage to do that. And now the president may be playing catch-up a little bit. But, you know, he's now occupying a position in which he's trying to stay above the fray a bit and trying to let others come up with the messy details while he sits in judgment over the process as it goes along. That's what we saw last week. I think that's what we're going to see now.
Jerry, we got just 15 seconds here. Debt ceiling, it's got to be raised to keep everything rolling. Are we going to see the same dynamic all over again?
Yes. The same dynamic, probably the same outcome, which is a messy conclusion in the affirmative.
Gerald Seib, Executive Washington Editor for The Wall Street Journal. Jerry, thank you very much for being with us today.
Happy to be with you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.